Jonathan that we are going to begin. Yeah, I think we're starting.
The Gospel of Christ. Report to John what you hear and see. The blind recovers their sight, cripples walk, lepers are cured, the deaf hear, dead men are raised to life, and the poor have the good news preached to them.
The Gospel of Santa Claus is for the affluent. Santa's mission is mainly to the healthy and the successful.
John the Baptist, the herald of Christ, proclaimed the Advent theme of repentance. Whoever has two coats must share with anyone who has none, and whoever has food must do so likewise.
The heralds of Santa Claus proclaim self-satisfaction.
If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me.
Pleasure is a dominant theme of Santa Claus. No room for self-denial or crosses.
John the Baptist, the herald of Christ, proclaimed the Advent theme of repentance.
To stimulate business, let him who has a coat get another.
Blessed are the poor in spirit.
Blessed are the wealthy.
Blessed are the meek.
Blessed are the powerful.
Blessed are the sorrowful.
Blessed are the comfortable.
Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for justice.
Blessed are the satisfied.
Love your neighbor.
Love your own.
Love your enemies.
Love your friends.
Befriend the hungry.
Befriend the full.
Befriend the naked.
The well-dressed.
The sick.
The healthy.
The homeless.
The well-housed.
The prisoners.
The respectable.
The strangers.
Friends.
I have come that they may have life more abundantly.
Well, that's the problem. That's the situation. We've all been aware of it for some time, probably since the day when we woke up at about age 8 and said to ourselves, Christmas just isn't like it used to be. Or as Auden put it, the innocent children who whispered so excitedly outside the locked door where they knew presents to be grew up when it opened. Well, we all grew up. We all realized that it's missing something. We've been going on for years, Sarah and I discussed it as we prepared for this session, attending sessions on alternative Christmas, getting excited about the prospects of all of the handy hints we received and all of the bright ideas. We soon discovered, however, that most of these ideas were more simplistic than simple. It's certainly not simple in the sense of ease, and it's certainly a whole lot more complicated than we ever thought it would be. Changes in lifestyle always are more complicated than we thought they would be. The only traditions, the only old-fashioned things we managed to recover was the old-fashioned principle that the primary homework had lots more work to do and simple ideas simply made more work. So tonight we want to try to go behind all of that. We want to try to examine what celebration is, to carry on really from the theme that Scott began yesterday, you are what you hope and wait for. Tonight's title is You Are What You Celebrate.
And we want to really try to focus on the We Are What We Celebrate, to think about the meaning of celebration, not only the meaning of Christmas as a celebration, Advent Christmas, the meaning of weddings, the meaning of funerals, the meaning of birthdays, the meaning of Thanksgiving, and those times in our lives that we lift up. In the book To Celebrate, they define celebration as a ritualized interruption in daily life that gives focus to life's meaning and purpose. To me, that was a helpful definition to me to try to figure out what celebration is. It seems to me that we would like to try to center our attention tonight on thinking about celebration as telling us who we are, how we're related to one another, how we're related to creation, how we're related to God. And it's our hope that in thinking through the meaning of celebration, that we can approach Christmas celebration in a more deliberate, deeper level, that will help us be more of what we celebrate. That's our hope. And we're going to guide that thinking with a guided meditation that Robert's going to do.
I'd like to guide you in a meditation for Advent. So please get comfortable. Relax. Be conscious of your breathing. Breathe in and breathe out. A meditation for Advent. Awaiting. Awaiting for God. A celebration of God incarnate. God in the earth. God in us all. God in you. Celebration of God in all creation. God becomes where any creature expresses God. And we celebrate where God is. Relax and breathe deep. We think of Mary. Think of Christ's birth. One night among the stars, around the campfire with the shepherds, in the falling snow. We're all here. We celebrate together. About to circle in the flickering light, we see our friends, our families, our ancestors, our descendants, ourselves. Keep breathing. All of us, our environment and our creations, all dissolving into deep waters of story and dream. In our story and dreams, we span our place and our time. Experience the immortal and boundlessness and seem better to know who we are. We dance to the rhythm of the seasons, while our bodies vibrate in the resonance of the music. We are together. We are together with creation. We are rooted with the trees. Our minds soar with the birds. We ask lessons of the fish. We're amazed at the delight and necessity of food. We energize our bodies with creatures and plants that feed on the wind, the rocks, the rain and the sun. We celebrate in the feasting of Thanksgiving. Give thanks in the fasting of solidarity. the confusion and pain of change and transition. We celebrate baptism, marriage, celebrations of ordination and confirmation, celebration of God born in Mary, of God born in us, God born in you, God born in others. We are one. We are one together. One with ourselves, one with each other, one with the rolling black oceans, one with the weightless clouds turning dizzily above, and one in the dance. The dance as we lift our arching backs from the dust, one with the time-thawing mountains, lifting majestically through the topsoil, agelessly heaving, spilling boulders like rain and rivers, like long flowing hair down into our warm valley, the warm valley of creation, where God is with us, in us. Where there is God, God is. We celebrate together. We celebrate God in Mary, God in the world. We celebrate where God is.
Now I'd like us to all think silently for a few moments and to imagine, we can, that no one has ever celebrated the birth of Christ before, but that we have decided to celebrate it. We know what Christ represents to us. We know what values that he calls us to embody in the world, and we want to celebrate that. We're making our own celebration. We're in charge of it. There are no precedents. We can do whatever we like. Let's think about that for a few moments. Whenever anyone is ready and has anything they would like to share, their thoughts and feelings about meditation or shape of celebration.
Well, I think I'd like in my celebration, if I were starting it, the story. I think I'd like to tell the story as a part of starting the celebration somehow, whether it be acting it out or, and I know we, the oops, I shouldn't say what, we've never done this before, right? Okay. Maybe some people might like to act it out. Or sit with some candles in a room and just kind of tell it. Maybe all ages telling the story with everyone having something to offer to the story, and maybe even using little paper dolls, or we can use paper, or something, mm-hmm. props, maybe, or maybe just nothing in the room, just telling, anyway, thinking about telling the story as part of the celebration.
I saw telling the story too, and I saw it as more, in addition to the birth story, telling the story, some stories from Jesus as an adult, as, doing mm-hmm. his ministry. And this was the life of Jesus. And I saw a lot of light and color, lots of candles. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful music.
Are you going to write the music?
Mm-hmm. Could. Yeah. Or could be something already written that you just love. That's good.
The music we would think of ballet. And doing a ballet of the birth of, around the baby and the baby.
My celebration came out as more active. I picture people gathering together, families and friends and, you know, community members and focusing, you know, celebrating the birth in a way that honored the life of making the celebration an action of doing what something that Jesus probably would have done for that day, you know, mm-hmm. be it, you know, give your coats, more of a, not a gift exchange, but a giving to those and comforting those, you know, kind of through the year that have, you know, members of the community that have had pain and problems and letting them know what Christ means. You know, and reminding of the togetherness, lots of people, and some action coming out of that celebration, something doing, physically yeah. doing. Something.
And you saw that beyond a family, the sort of nuclear family.
Because for me, my family's not close by, and so mm-hmm. I thought, you know, as I'm thinking about how I would celebrate this with friends and people that I have contact with that live close by, and mm-hmm. in my picture, it wasn't just people in my family, it was even people I didn't know I was picturing.
Mm. Yeah. I was too, and I remembered the story of the wedding feast where they invited everyone in, mm-hmm. kind of in from the streets.
Yeah.
Well, believe it or not, I thought of food, and I thought of how what would be so wonderful would be to be together with friends, but to have all the food prepared ahead of time and put away, almost as if it was a secret. And when it was time that we were hungry and wanted something, somebody who knew where it was would go and get it out, like out from the freezer or from the cupboard or something, and then put it out, and it would be better than usual. I mean, it would be the kind of food that you have for a party. And, you know, you can go over and take a little bit, and maybe a little later another tray of something else would come out. And not that you sit and eat a whole lot like a great big banquet or something, but that you'd, mm-hmm. you know, pick away at it a little bit at a time.
Oh, that's fun. I like that. The food's always so much better late in the afternoon when you've just begun to get a little bit hungry and you're just nibbling.
But it has to be surprising.
Surprising food. Simple. Is that the word? Surprising food.
Surprising food. Yeah.
I saw it, I guess my Christmas came off more like Earth Day. I saw evergreens and snow, and just mostly solidarity in just being able to be in the quiet of the woods, and maybe it's the older setting. I suppose I could do it in Volunteer Park if I were in Seattle, in the rain rather than the snow, but at least I'd have the evergreens. And just thinking about, as Sarah said, what the birth of Christ represents, and all that we have to be thankful for as a result of that birth, and just celebrating that in a rather quiet way. More contemplative.
with the soft music, I had this image of being in a room with friends, and we were giving each other these stories of how we saw God being revealed in each other. So I would tell my friend way through the last year that I thought that person had really bent like, and then that was happening to me too as a gift to me. That's kind of how my celebration was.
I had a similar thought. I think it's similar, and I was very much in awe of the incarnation and seeing God kind of cracking through heaven to become human was one part of it. And then when Robert said something about the birth of God within each of us, the incarnation is in us too. And I thought of an egg, and I thought in my celebration there would be eggs around and we would crack them open. It seemed like they're encapsulated what I was seeing.
It was funny, that reminds me of part of the difficulty I had in trying to become a Southern Hemisphere person, which I never succeeded in doing, incidentally. But it should have been an opportunity, and maybe now at this distance I should think back on it more. But the shock to the system of celebrating Easter when it was harvest, and our pastor in the small town in New Zealand trying to make an Easter sermon out of a pumpkin. and hiding Easter eggs under dead leaves. it certainly did make you think, and it's something I want to explore some more, but that Christmas was at the time of the greatest abundance. It was midsummer. The seed thing made me think of that.
I sort of saw part of the same thing, that Jesus is God-made person. I thought of totally switching places, being somewhere where you've never been before, or not so much where you've never been, but all the rules are very unfamiliar, and making a Christmas out of it. What you mentioned was a good example of it, being in the Southern Hemisphere and celebrating Easter with a pumpkin, that kind of thing. Just somehow making do with what there. I thought more in terms of us being on the streets, you know, where the homeless people usually are, and mm-hmm. us trying to make a Christmas out of that. Some big switch that took place between two hours.
And what did you do? I mean, are there some specifics?
Well, I didn't do anything specific. I just thought of everything switched somehow, almost like a Mardi Gras kind of thing. Like for that one day, everybody switched roles. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, since we were clean, it's not a practical thing. You know, I thought it would. I mean, you know, I think people would grow an appreciation for how others live and that sort of.
Well, I just had a total revelation here. I was sitting here trying to put myself into figuring out what to do with a Christmas celebration. And the first thing that came to my mind was giving gifts. And then it's like all of a sudden, this voice hits me. That's the part you hate the most about Christmas, is going out, doing all the shopping, all the commercialization, trying to find the right gift for all the people. But yet somehow, when I really stop to think about it, that is something that is very important part of it. The gift that I saw myself giving to the family, particularly the ones that I'm closest to, was something much more personal than maybe what I've done in the past. I visualized a painting, a saying, something that would have meaning for their life beyond just Christmas Day, but it was still a gift. Mm. I scared myself here. Mm.
I guess I'm just a little bit on the traditional side as far as Lutheranism is concerned. I think you've come up with some real splendid ideas here. Somewhere along the line on this particular day, I'd like to run in a little bit of a Lutheran liturgical service on this.
That was the story they had at the beginning.
There's no reason why it shouldn't be. You know, I mean, we don't, just because we're imaging, no one's ever done it before, and we're creating it from the ground up. Maybe you could recreate some things that are just like people created from the ground up when they did it in the first place. I mean, just because we're thinking about starting from zero doesn't mean we don't necessarily arrive in some of the same places.
That's enlightening.
When I think of Christmas, I always want the children to be able to tell the Christmas story. I remember one Christmas when we had a fellow with us, a college student, and he was Buddhist. And he came in and saw our nativity set. And he said to my youngest daughter, "What is that?" And she told him the Christmas story. She was four and a half then. And I think what I would visualize is children, the younger, the better, telling the Christmas story in their own words.
But somehow that's particularly exciting to think of telling the story to someone who's never heard it before.
Mm-hmm. That was one of my most moving memories of Christmas. Thinking of Christmas's past, another thing that I remember was in our last sabbatical Eve in Jerusalem, in Bethlehem, on Christmas Eve. And it's like a carnival. It's all kinds of concession stands, and everybody pushing and shoving to get into the Church of the Nativity, because there's nowhere near enough room for the thousands of people. It's anything but the kind of atmosphere that you would like to have for Christmas. And I remember getting back to the Institute where we were and saying that I didn't enjoy that time of Christmas, thinking the idea of the little town of Bethlehem, and it was just the opposite. And our wise director said, "And what do you think the first Christmas was like?"
Yeah.
Christmas
is the
That was just like
that. Yeah, so who were those guys that told us it was lime sweetie? It was kind of a hoax, wasn't it?
Somebody brought up a moment ago, what's your name?
Shirley.
About gifts, and certainly in our reading, and Sarah mentioned this too, didn't you? In our reading about this, and we read all these books that you see scattered around here, that it just keeps coming back to this gift business. And I guess I'm curious to think, if we are celebrating God's presence in this world, God's being born in us, of which the birth of Mary is the primary image of God's incarnation. So we're celebrating God's presence here. Why gifts? Do you have any ideas in your new personalized Christmas? What part would gifts play? I mean, this was really exciting to me. Any other ideas on that?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that for a little bit. When the first time that I can remember being in Holden Village, there was a slogan that was taken from a little piece of scripture that was, we have this gift. Mm-hmm. And it was talking about having the gift of the Word of God in our midst, and that we can share it with each other. But it was also more than that. It was the fact that the existence of Holden Village is this gift. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of like there were several layers of meaning in that expression. And I've treasured that ever since that time. In fact, every time I come back here, and this time in particular, I feel like I have received tremendous gifts. But they're abstract. They're not something that you put in a package or that you can unwrap or that you can put away somewhere. But it's gifts of ideas, like from books and some pamphlets out here and things like that, that I need these because I need them for home life and church back home. And in fact, I was just saying to my wife before the session that sometimes I think of this as the fountain and the source, and that back home is the desert, where it's wilderness, and we have to bring some of this lush water back out there to the wilderness and wash it.
It's going there fast.
Not that kind of water.
Jane, I have a thought on gifts that we've talked about with our children, and that is that Christ himself was a gift. He was a gift to all humankind. He was the greatest gift we could receive, and he was a gift of love, mm-hmm. given in love. And then as part of the story, the wise men came, and they brought gifts to honor, and again, as an expression of love. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that, for me, gift-giving relates is, number one, is a remembrance of the first gift, the gift mm-hmm. that we're all really celebrating at Christmas. And the other thing that we have always emphasized, and we exchange gifts as expressions of love for each other, mm-hmm. Which is what God was expressing to us when he gave us the gift of Christ. But also then, when you talked about the values that Christ brought and tried to teach, and that is the sharing of gifts with others. We talked about gifts, and that's where we have an opportunity to donate some time during the Christmas season in a soup kitchen, or to give clothes to the cold, to give food to the hungry, to give something that comes from inside ourselves out into the world that needs it more than we do. I see gifts too as an integral part of Christmas, because it's based on a gift.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking too, I've thought of this for several years, and I see that there are pitfalls, but I would like to have gift giving go on for 12 days. I don't know who
there are pitfalls.
There are, but I so resent life back to normal mm-hmm. on the third day of Christmas, and nobody recalling that it is a season, not just a day of frenzy. Mm-hmm. And it's something I think I'm going to think about as our family grows. And the first emphasis would be on little gifts, and then the kinds of gifts mm-hmm. that you mentioned, Linda, would be an option. And then I would propose then to do gift giving at Easter too, because that's another time of gift. I think mm-hmm. Easter gets such short shrift that, boy, and it really feels like out of the frying pan into the fire, you know, because so much of us are so burdened by gift giving, as many of us do in this society. And
this afternoon, I just finished Paul Tournier's book, The Meaning of Gifts. And he talks in there a lot about what you said, that God was a gift to us, and that gift-giving is sort of a reciprocal thing, and it's an important need in our exchange with one another as humans. And I think that really is the act of the gift-giving and receiving is probably the important thing, not necessarily what the gift itself is, but the genuine giving and the receiving is an important need that we as humans have.
Yeah. We spent a Christmas in Spain 1 year with our exchange student's family, and the Christ child was put into the manger on Christmas Eve, and from then till the 12th night was the celebration. On the 12th night was the night that the wise men brought the gifts to the family, and that was really a special time. I thought the idea of the wise men bringing the gifts on the 12th night and all the celebration during that time was really special. It made it not just one day.
To me, one of the hardest things about gift giving is not knowing what the person would like and enjoy. And what I found is it's really helpful and appreciated if you can tell people what you might like and enjoy, if you have some ideas for simple gifts. And I have a friend who's very strapped for money, and when I moved from Tennessee to Seattle 1.5 years ago, I knew she was worried about what she could give me, and I asked her if she would be willing to give me for a Christmas present a letter a month for January through May during my first year of my new job. And I told her that I probably wouldn't be able to write her back every time because it was going to be a crazy year, but that would be the best gift that she could possibly give me. And she was just delighted, and it worked. It was wonderful.
How did you think of that?
It was self-defense. I knew how lonely I'd be. And I knew that she was really strapped down.
It's really true. I think that so often gift-giving is just, you do it all by yourself, and that isn't the way it should work. It should be in relationship. And it's a risk to give someone a gift, and it's a risk to receive a gift. And that's what makes it relationship.
Sarah, Al talked once about for birthdays how you guys had exchanged coupons, sort of our love coupon kinds of ideas. Then one of the things that we have done is, but for our sons is to make coupon books for their birthdays and for Christmas. And it's really interesting because regardless of how many other gifts they get, the coupon books last because they're good for a whole year, so they can use the coupons at any time during the year. And they're for things like when Drew was little, for 150 pushes on the swing. You know, you send a coupon in the year, or, you know, 50 pitches while you bat with the baseball bat, or 1 hour of pre-story time that's not scheduled like a deadline or something, or a trip to the park. And those coupon books have become a real tradition. And again, those are the kinds of gifts that you were talking about that are of your time and of yourself, and those become the most meaningful things, the really memorable things. And then there's always this mad rush in the fall when they realize they haven't used all of their coupons to make sure they use them before they expire on the next day.
Yeah, in the reading, a lot of the ideas that did come up about gift-giving were things that tended to try to spread it, to try to get away from this, what one of the books called a gift-opening frenzy. You know, it's just a ritual of gift-opening. Not even gift-giving, but gift-opening. And some of the traditions that they refer to in different parts of the world, like the tradition of Spain, is to claim the concept of Epiphany and gift giving them, to claim the feast of Saint Nicholas on December the 6th, and to move gift giving to that time, or to have gift giving on the 12 days of Christmas and spread it out over those 12 days, though I laughed because we did this with our daughters, and we've got three daughters, and you'd think 12 multiplied by 3, yeah. You can get yourself into a real bind doing this, and it's very hard sometimes not to let these good ideas backfire on you, and to some extent that one did backfire on us. But on the other hand, I have to say that I think it's what they appreciated most. And they were just little things, you know. We decided that if we were going to do it, well, we got this institution of stockings. And one of the things I disliked most when people start talking about this frenzy of Christmas Day was the kids ripping everything out of these stockings and having it everywhere. And I thought, well, I don't like that. And if we're going to give them gifts over 12 days, and they're going to be little things, let's make them all fit into the stockings. So now I've added another level to my problem, that not only is it 12 little things that hopefully aren't too expensive, it's 12 little things that are going to fit into the stocking that I had already made, you know. So, but it did get away from this ripping open the stocking and having all this stuff in the stocking, that they may have dumped everything out and they handled it, and then there was this anticipation of what is it, and they'd feel it and guess what it was, but it had to go back in the stocking and couldn't be opened. And some years we would number them, so they opened those on certain days. Each little package had a number on it. And other years we would let them just pick which of these packages they wanted to open first, and they'd have this preference. And all this made it more exciting and did spread it out.
You don't seem to have a real sense of celebration. I mean, it's like you do it, and then it's back to business as usual. You know, I mean, it's like you said, the present open frenzy. You know, I mean, it's like that's Christmas, and a lot of us work up till Christmas, and then we get Christmas and maybe the next day off, and then we're back to work, and the celebration part doesn't seem to be in it. Did any of those books say anything about giving back to the idea of just celebrating something?
Well, I think when we were going through a lot of these books and then decided to kind of try to think a little bit together on terms of what celebration means, and to repeat that to celebrate talks about it as a ritualized interruption in our daily lives, mm-hmm. to lift up what our purpose is in some ways. I found that really helpful to me. So even though we make a celebration, sometimes has a beginning and an end, it seems to me, sometimes whatever it is for that particular time. And this idea of an interruption in our daily life is kind of interesting to me. I don't know what people think about that idea, to think about life's meaning and purpose. And so I don't know whether that helps in thinking about even when something seems frenzied. maybe in some ways, of course, I think many of us are trying to think about that, is that what we want, is frenzy? Is that what celebration is? And maybe think that we need to rethink what celebration is. Mm-hmm. But whatever form it takes, hopefully for some of us maybe a different form than we've had in the beginning, it does lift up something to us that when we go on in our daily life, we kind of know why we're doing that. I don't know. Jonathan,
I was just going to say something kind of along those lines. One year, my junior year in college, I spent Christmas in England because I was studying abroad. And this particular Christmas, I think it was on a Christmas Day, was on a Friday. So, and in England, things just shut down. Everything stops. The buses don't run. Nobody goes out. Everything is closed. So everything was closed on Friday because it was Christmas. And then Saturday is another holiday in England. It's Boxing Day, so everything was shut then. And then Sunday, everything's always shut anyway, so everything was shut then.
And then Monday was a bank holiday because Boxing Day was on a Saturday. So everything was shut on Monday, too. So everything was shut. And also, this Christmas happened to be, I had a friend who was studying in Spain at the time, and he came up and spent the Christmas, he and actually another friend, two friends that were studying in different countries that I hadn't seen for 6 months or more, who were very good friends, came up and we spent all that time together. And during those days where everything was shut, we just kind of sat around and talked, and we'd all been very lonely, it turned out, just because of our various situations. And we just, I remember 3 nights in a row just laid in bed and talked till 4:30 in the morning. And, you know, didn't really get any gifts and of the material kind that Christmas, but it was a wonderful time. Just because I got to some really quiet time and got time to spend with some important people.
I think in answer to Verlon's question that, yeah, the books do talk about that kind of thing quite a lot, and a lot of them do talk about ideas about how you can decide who it is that it's important for you to be with at Christmas, and what kind of time it's important for you to have with those people, and then try to structure the celebration so that you get that kind of time, rather than just letting yourself be drawn into this frenzy of a food prepper, one person, you know, preparing a perfectly beautiful feast. And so, yeah, the books do talk about that kind of thing. And so it's, yes, there. Yeah, Kitty.
Since our family, our children are growing now and married, we found it difficult to gather as a family. And so we began setting aside a day other than Christmas Eve or Christmas Day to gather, exchange gifts, have the elaborate meal, play the games, be together, and go no place else. And then we reserve Christmas Eve and Christmas Day to really begin in a peaceful manner the festivities of the church. And it has just been such a very beautiful spiritual time for us. And so we have both, and so the season is extended for us. And I really do appreciate what, you know, that has been given to us.
Last evening in the session, we were remembering Advent in preparation for Christmas, and as far back as we remember into childhood. And I particularly remembered that it was very different than nowadays, because it wasn't possible to do everything instantly then. And what I remember best about it was that Christmas seemed to take a time to develop, because we had to. It was the one time of the year that the electric train set could be set up and left out. And it took time to set up the electric train. And we were allowed to put it under the dining room table. I still don't quite understand how this could be, because and firehouse, and maybe there was 8 or 10 pieces in the whole set. So it took time to get all that stuff out, and the creche, the manger scene, and to put the figures in place and everything. And I'm romanticizing it, because I don't have a precise memory of it, but it seems to me that it took us a period of several days to get everything all set up around the tree. I mean, maybe we would do it a little bit one evening and then some more the next evening. So Christmas didn't happen instantly like it seems to now. And I like that memory. Maybe I have a romantic.
Speaking of time, Shirley, I think you laughed almost hysterically when somebody talked about giving time. Maybe with time pressing on us too, that might be an interesting thing for us all to reflect on, is this issue of time in celebration.
I always get frantic at Christmas time anymore, because it just seems like there's just more things to do than there's possibly time. Mm-hmm. And between working and all of the activities at school for the kids and church, and buying gifts, decorating the house, wrapping the gifts, sending cards. You know, it's just exhausting. And it ends up, I guess when I think of celebration, the word that I associate with it is joy. Mm-hmm. And for me, by the time I get to December 25th, there isn't a lot of joy, there's just exhaustion. And I've thought and I've tried for years to figure out how to scale it down and how to make it be different, and have not had a great deal of successes.
One of the things that in the Unplug the Christmas Tree, you say when we were going through these things, that I liked about the book, I don't like everything about it, but this I liked, which was something that I knew, but they needed to be told, but I'd like some reaction. Is that she starts out first saying that women are the Christmas machine.
Yeah.
And that men generally aren't particularly connected in terms of the preparation. And that she even calls, if they were to get going and doing something, they might be still the stage hands, which I still have a little problem with. That's why I don't like that book that much. But I would like to know whether, indeed, my nodding like, yeah, Even if I wanted to, change Christmas, I'm going to have to do it. And is that indeed, what is it that are men, are you men, somewhat more detached? Have we, Christmas, or enjoy, or do it, or conceive it in a different way, or any celebration, but let's take Christmas because that's what we're on right now. Do we women feel that we are in charge? We are the machine. We're the magician. I'm sorry, it's not machine, it's magician. We have to make it work. Machine is there. We have to make it work.
We produce it.
Is there something wrong with that? I don't know. I would really like to know. My son told me today when I was talking to him about Christmas, unfortunately I've been doing it, he says, you're making this a nightmare.
I know, sir, that I read that book, and what I remember getting out of it, and I don't know that I got out of the book, but I wrote down all the things I thought I had to do for Christmas. And then I only circled the ones I thought were the five most important to me. And I thought, I'm not responsible for all those other things at all. And I've celebrated Christmas all my life, but I've only understood what it was about for a couple of years. And so each year since I learned about Christ, the last couple of years, it's been the most wonderful, exciting time for me to really come to Christmas and know how much I've grown in the last year in my knowledge of God. But I want it to be different than it was all of my life, or what's the point? If you're celebrating Christmas the same as Nordstrom's, or the same as the mall, or the same as, I think of my children's friends who don't have the foggiest idea of who Christ is, then I know I'm doing something wrong if I haven't changed at all.
In fact, that's the pressure. I think the pressure that is not for the best is to try to be so secular, so much like Nordstrom's. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think we long to change about it, mm-hmm. to get it back more to Christ's birthday and less of Nordstrom's.
Well, I know when my mother died a few years back, about 3 years ago, and Christmas was always, spent at home, and she cooked, and we set up the tree and all of that sort of thing. And I know the year after she died, we all kind of sat around and said, it just doesn't feel like Christmas anymore. A lot of it had to do with she cooked certain kinds of things that we were used to. All the men basically had to do was show up. And,
yes, we were saying that.
The men showed up, and then we didn't help with dishes. We just left or slept on, laid around and slept and watched football and stuff like that. And she was responsible for a lot of that sort of thing. And so the year after that, it was like, if we wanted to have a Christmas, we had to do it ourselves, you know. And my other three brothers were still intent on just showing up. But, you know, we did have to make it ourselves. But now some of that was stuff that she wanted. You know, it was her way of getting the family together and stuff like that. And I think the men were just going along with it. Because I think that a lot of men's idea of a good Christmas is maybe the family sitting around all watching a football game. You know, something to that effect. I don't think men get as worked up about particular decorations or that sort of thing. I don't think it's being disconnected with Christmas. I just don't think pretty little things hanging on a tree and the walls and the windows mean much to me.
They mean a lot to me.
Well,
they weren't there. Wouldn't you miss them? They just weren't there. You had Christmas and none of that was there.
Well, not particularly. I mean, I like the weather. I like the season itself. I like, you know, like Frank mentioned the other night, driving out to the rich neighborhoods, watching the lights on their houses and stuff like that. But I don't necessarily feel like I have to have little fancy doilies sitting around my house and little, you know. I just don't, you know, I don't feel like that. Christmas is still Christmas without that stuff. I remember my father groaning, you know, because he was the one who had to climb up and connect the lights to the window. You know, we never had that many lights. You know, it really wasn't worth the effort. But we had a string of lights that went around two windows. You know, we did this every year, and you know, all
you
that.
You may be revealing more than you wish.
But what he really liked, you know, what my father really enjoyed doing was setting up the train set. And that was his thing. He really enjoyed that sort of thing. And there are things my brothers get into, like putting the toys together for their sons, some little weird thing that you get that they sit up all night trying to put together and the kid breaks it in 2 days. But, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think a man's idea of Christmas is a little different. Yeah. And it's the combination of the two, I think, that maybe makes a good Christmas.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. The balance. Yes.
Yeah.
We have a couple of more, and then we need to kind of
wind it off. Yeah. Jonathan and someone else over here.
I was just going to say, my mother died a couple of years ago too, and the worst time was Christmas, because Christmas was her thing, and I mean, she was into Christmas. She'd be shopping for Christmas presents in May, and go to some, you know, Christmas land or something that had Christmas, you know, 365 days a year. And she'd be shopping for stuff, and we'd go on vacation, she'd buy stuff. But that, it wasn't so much the buying, it was that she really wanted to give things to people. But I also remember when my dad remarried and came home from college for for Christmas for the first time, when we had this new family together. And I just about had a cow because there were Norwegian flags hanging in the Christmas tree. And I'm like, what is this doing here? This is not my Christmas decoration.
Is there anything how attached we get to
the thing?
How we
handle like
your
that.
Kids, yeah.
And so in a way it is kind of important. And I remember very distinctly kind of Christmas things that we'd do every Christmas, and it wasn't my mother that put them together. And when she was gone, and a new situation came up, then things really, really changed, and I really missed them.
Well, I think that it is the women who do it. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But it's and sometimes we get overburdened, our shoulders are so broad. But it's kind of a privilege to be able to carry those things forward. And instead of the cup being half empty, maybe we have to see it half full. I may be the only one of the two of us that eats it, but I have pickled herring every Christmas. No, that's Norwegian, and my father used to make it from scratch. Now, I don't make it from scratch because I got fish bones in my hand one year, and I said, this isn't fun. But I go to the market and have it. And Elizabeth may not eat it, and she may turn up her nose, but to me it's important to carry that forward. And maybe somebody someday will carry that forward for us beyond. But it is kind of a privilege in a way. It's kind of like a secret that we have.
Before this evening gets away, I want to start a new trend that's been going on for years in our house. Men, if you eat a holiday meal, Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's or whatever, do the dishes. If your wife prepares a meal, you do the dishes. I've been doing that for years. It's healthy. It's good for you.
Okay, so to sort of wind up, not that we have to stop talking about this, as we keep saying after every session here, but very briefly, I did, unless you think Sarah and I didn't do anything except have waffly thoughts, we did get together some of the best ideas from our reading, and yes, I've made copies, and there's also a list of sort of the major resources here. Unplug the Christmas Machine, available in the shop. Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? I have a few copies of that. This book is put out by people called Alternatives, and it also contains, and I have made extra copies for your use, the order form in the back that allows you to order extra copies of this book, which is an excellent resource of Bible study, worship services, discussion ideas, all in this book from under the heading of ELCA, and that will also give you an order form to order this book, which is a much fuller resource on lifestyle change, particularly around celebrations, and is very useful. It's also available in the bookstore.
Is that also ELCA?
No,
it's not ELCA. No. They just print the church name on.
Okay. The ELCA has printed their name on this and given their
impartor,
to this, their blessing to it. So these will all be out on the table also, and have a look at them, and there's extra order forms. If anybody needs any more, let me know. And you can get a copy of this up here at the front. And just to finish off, I want to read a small excerpt from a poem by Ferlinghetti. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and ran away to where there were no rootless Christmas trees hung with candy canes and breakable stars. Christ climbed down from his bare tree this year and softly stole away into some anonymous Mary's womb again, where in the darkest night of everybody's anonymous soul, he awaits again an unimaginable and impossibly immaculate reconception, the very craziest of second comings.
Let us pray. Dear God, thank you for tonight and gathering together to think on celebration and what does it really mean. We listed lots of things that if we were to start a Christmas celebration from scratch, that really gets to what we think is important or how to do it. Story, music, lights, ballet, family, secret food, evergreens and snow, eggs, being somewhere completely new, a big switch, gifting, a Lutheran liturgical service, children telling the story, and many, many things that we got to thinking about in terms of what a Christmas celebration might mean. Help us to continue to ponder, to think, to appreciate, and to rejoice in Emmanuel, God with us, as the reason for our celebration. Amen. Amen.
I think I'm going to try the secret.